Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, February 23rd, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A cash-strapped Zimbabwe asks the African Development Bank to cancel its debt to the financial institution, saying this would help in jump-starting the country's ailing economy.
Because of their rules and regulations, we cannot enjoy the benefits of our membership, meaning we cannot access concessional borrowing from them unless we clear our arrears.
The civil servants vow to resist efforts to cut their salaries or freeze salary hikes, saying the government should first ensure prices of basic commodities are reduced.
It's a very difficult thing to do because salaries are very political, and hence civil servants will not just take it lying down.
And the African Union is scaling up efforts to fight and contain the Ebola virus that has affected Western Africa.
Virtually all the countries are taking precautions, so it's not just only Southern Africa. And we intend to continue to do this even in the post-Ebola through the setup of the African CDC that we are working together with our partner at the US CDC to commence in July.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa today appealed to the African Development Bank to cancel the country's debt to the financial institution, saying this would help in jump-starting the country's ailing economy. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Minister Chinamasa met a 10-member delegation of the AFDB executive that is on a week-long visit in Harare and appealed for debt relief from the financial institution. He said if the AFDB cancels Zimbabwe's $500 million debt, other international money-lending institutions were most likely to follow suit, adding this would help revive the country's struggling economy.
Because of their rules and regulations, we cannot enjoy the benefits of our membership, meaning we cannot access concessional borrowing from them unless we clear our arrears. So I've tried to appeal to the bank to come up with a mechanism that will help us clear those arrears. I'm aware that they've done it with respect to other countries, and my appeal to them is that they should bend over backwards to assist us so that we become part of the global economy.
FDB Executive Director and Head of the Bank's Zimbabwe Mission, Aliu Momodungum, would not say whether his institute would consider Zimbabwe's request for debt relief.
And our assistance to the country is not only to the public sector through government. We also very aware that really to accelerate the advancement of the country, we need to address the private sector. And we've discussed with the minister that being in arrears with the ADB does not exclude the ADB supporting the private sector.
The Harare administration has an external debt overhang of nearly $10 billion that the country has been failing to service. In 2014, the IMF spanned Harare's request for debt relief under the heavily indebted poor countries HIPIC initiative, saying Zimbabwe was not poor enough. The HIPIC initiative was used in countries like Zambia to settle its debt. Meanwhile, the FDB delegation is expected to tour all the projects funded by the bank during its mission. The bank has funded the Lake Harvest Fish Farm project to the tune of $8 million, and the project on the eastern shores of the Lake Kariba is being used as a model for sustainable development projects in Africa. At the end of its mission, the AFDB delegation is expected to meet President Robert Mugabe before heading to Mozambique. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Government workers have vowed to resist any moves to reduce or freeze salaries following recommendations from Central Bank Chief John Mangujga and Zimbabwe Revenue Authority Chief Geshom Pasi, respectively. Reacting, the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association, the Nurses Association, the Zimbabwe Teachers Association, and the Apex Council all told Studio 7 that cutting salaries is not the answer and will be resisted. They said the government must focus on reviving the economy and ensuring that prices are reduced, as most workers are living well below the poverty datum line.
Economist and former finance minister Tendai Biti also say they are baffled by the ballooning of the civil service from 250,000 during the unity government to about 554,000 this year. The government has been struggling to meet the wage bill. Labour and Economic Development Research Institute Director Godfrey Kanyenze tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that tinkering with the salaries will likely cause friction.
It is unfortunate, disappointing and uncalled for that the civil servant salaries have become a topical and a public issue for debate at any fora, and this is uncalled for. This is disrespectful of the relevant dialogue in processes that should be promoted by the state and government and the employer in particular. And as far as I'm concerned, these statements should not be uttered carelessly, otherwise they invite resistance and the wrath of the civil servants. And as far as we're concerned, the responsible officer should work very hard to mobilize resources for the country and ensure that we meet the obligations that we have championed as a country. And that is the idea. So it is important that the supply side of our economy is promoted strongly, as opposed to the current issue that you're talking about.
We'd like to apologize. That, in fact, was not Kanyenze as we read out. Here now is Mr. Kanyenze.
It's a very difficult thing to do because salaries are very political, and hence civil servants will not just take it lying down. Also because salaries are just a symptom of a bigger malaise. The problem is not just in salaries. The salaries have been chasing a model that has not been based on any scientific basis. When we migrated from using the Zimbabwean dollar to use multi-currencies in 2009, there was no scientific basis at all for the new pricing regime. So in essence, when workers were negotiating, they would say, what do I need to survive in this environment? And then they would come up with a scientific basis, which had been calculated by government on the basis of the food poverty line or on the basis of the food poverty data line. So they would negotiate on that basis. But even then, the wages have never come anywhere closer to the poverty data line.
It appears the number of civil servants ballooned soon after the government of national unity. What really happened?
You remember that there was an NSM Young payroll audit, which found that there were 75,000 irregularly employed civil servants. We saw it again later on when the IMF alleged in the build-up to the 2013 elections that 6,000 more bodies had been added onto the civil service payroll. So these are some of the issues. So it's not just reducing the salary levels, but also looking into the whole issue of public sector reform.
That there was economist and labor and economic development research institute director Godfrey Kanyenze speaking on the line with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu. You are listening to Studio 7, broadcasting from Washington, D.C.
The The MDCT formation says it has developed a four-year plan that will guide it through to the 2018 elections. Party Secretary General Douglas Monzora says their National Executive Committee met in Harare for 3 days until yesterday and agreed on an operational framework for the 4 years starting this 2015. He tells Studio 7 the workshop was critically important because the party is trying to do things differently from previous years when they did not have strategic plans.
This is the first strategic meeting of the year. We were coming up with a number of things, our work plan up to 2018, as well as our work plan for 2015 and our operational framework for 2015 and 2016, 2017, 2018. This is critically important because we want to do things differently. We want to make sure that everything we do according to plan.
You have been holding such workshops, Mr. Monzora, in the past years. How different is this one from the previous ones?
Well, the main difference is the focus of the national executive and the oneness and the sameness of purpose of the members of the executive. Previously, you had people with their own plans to form their own political parties. You had people who were thinking of renewal, people who were thinking of MDC Ngube, people who were thinking of UMDC. Now this is now different. We have people who are looking at this thing with one mind and with one eye. That's the critical difference. The second one was the level of detail and the amount of expertise that went into this arrangement.
That was MDCT Secretary General Douglas Monzora in Harare. A political analyst and ZANU-PF member, Maurice Ngwenya, says he does not see the opposition party fulfilling any of its plans.
MDC is a well-known party of confusion, and that is why we hear them say, year of planning. Do you need a whole year to plan something? So if they are now trying to plan right now, what were they doing all along? This shows that there is a lot of confusion, and all they are trying to do right now is to seek donor funding because the donors are very sick and tired of the NGOs that they were giving money to fund on behalf of MDC because they never accounted for that money. So right now they are trying to meet the conditions of those donors by trying to be seen to be doing something such as workshops. But all in all, if you look at what they did, it was just a waste of resources. All they did was a waste of time. That will never translate into the livelihood of people. That can in no way bring jobs on the table. That will in no way improve the services delivery. That is why it will always remain in oblivion. No one will vote for such a party because instead of bringing in new and good ideas, in reality, there is nothing really to talk about to the majority of people in Zimbabwe.
Political analyst and ZANU-PF member Maurice Ngwenya on the phone with Studio 7 from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
we take a close look at the Ebola crisis and efforts being made to contain the outbreak.
But before we go to the Ebola outbreak, we take a look at regional and international news.
Two shopping malls, one in the United States and the other in Canada, are operating with higher security measures following a terrorist threat made by Somali-based Islamist militants. The Mall of America in Minnesota and the Edmonton Mall in Canada both issued statements saying they were increasing security after Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Shabaab released a video Saturday appearing to call for attacks on Western shopping malls.
North Korean authorities have banned foreigners from participating in its annual International Pyongyang Marathon in April, citing fears about the spread of the deadly Ebola virus, tour organizers say today.
And Batman, a film about an aging former superhero actor starring Michael Keaton, won the Oscar for the Best Picture Sunday at the 87th Annual Academy Awards. Batman's director, Alejandro Iñárritu, dedicated the Best Picture Prize to his fellow Mexicans, including those who have been crossing into the United States.
Africa is making progress in its efforts, working with authorities in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea in trying to contain and eradicate the Ebola crisis that has crippled three African countries. The Director of Social Affairs at the African Union, Dr. Olawale Maigwan, says plans are now at an advanced stage for the African Union to set up the African Centers for Disease Control Unit that is expected to begin in July. The African Center is a partnership with the United States, Atlanta-based Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, which has been working with the African Union to fight the deadly Ebola virus. Dr. Maigwan speaks with VOA's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
We started way back in August when the AU Peace and Security Council decided to send a civil military mission to the Ebola-affected countries. We immediately put in motion the setup of the AU response to Ebola outbreak in West Africa, and that is, you know, with the abbreviation of ASEOA, since it took us precisely about 3.5 weeks from time of conceptualization of the idea and when we got, you know, gloves on ground. I'm not going to use the word booth. It took us less than 4 weeks because by September 15, General Dr. Julius Okeita, the head of the ASEOA mission, arrived to set up his headquarters in Monrovia. And 2 days later, the first set of medical volunteers arrived in Monrovia. Since then, we have scaled up from the modest beginning of deployment of about 100 health workers. We've been able to do this and also to improve on the training and thanks to one of our good supporters, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta that has partnered with us in the training of our field and medical epidemiologists in contact tracing. They've been one of our biggest collaborators, and we're very appreciative of the collaboration we have with them.
When you look at the deployment of health personnel within Ebola-affected countries, who have been your biggest contributors?
In terms of the deployment, we have now the highest contributor has been Nigeria, followed by Ethiopia, Kenya, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and just recently we've completed the deployment of a modest number from South Africa that have joined. We're still hopeful to deploy more as we are getting to the point of rotation. But the good news is that when we went into Liberia in September, Ebola was chasing us. Now I'm happy to know that we are chasing Ebola, though it's not yet over, but we have made tremendous progress since then.
Looking at Southern African countries, specifically Zimbabwe, what measures has the African Union put in place in terms of preparedness for an Ebola outbreak should it occur?
Well, we are working with all the member states to, you know, in terms of their preparedness, not just only countries in Southern Africa, but the most critical are nearby and neighboring countries, since the experience have shown that we are all just a flight away from Ebola. As witness in Dallas, as witness in Lagos, as witness in Madrid and in London, that wherever we are, we're just a flight away. So we've partnered with WHO, with the member states themselves to increase their preparedness. But the focus has been more on Cote d'Ivoire, on Mali, Senegal. Well, of course, Senegal experienced it a little. And, of course, Ghana, that it's used as a bridge for the UN home here. Again, Nigeria has always been on the alert since they have also had an experience. But virtually, all the countries are taking precautions, so it's not just only Southern Africa. And we intend to continue to do this even in the post-Ebola through the setup of the African CDC that we are working together with our partners at the U.S. CDC to commence in July with a modest event-based surveillance system and also with the ability to give capacity building to our member states to be able to effectively implement the International Health Regulations 2005. And of course, we are also looking ahead to keep a kind of a roster, since we've tried something new and we have also surprised ourselves in our ability to respond to public threat, in this case, Ebola. So we look forward to keeping a core of these volunteers because at the beginning, as I mentioned, close to about 100 young women and men of this continent on their own answered our call to volunteer to go to help their brothers and sisters in those three affected countries. So we'll be looking forward to keeping and developing a core of volunteers that we can call upon in case of future, already trained as part of the Centers for Disease Control that we are also trying to set up. So these are some of the things we are looking forward to doing, and we've actually commenced them even as the Ebola is coming to an end.
That was Director of Social Affairs at the African Union, Dr. Alowale Maigun, speaking to VOA's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye from Ethiopia.
Criminal defamation is dead. Long live freedom of expression. That pronouncement from Information Minister Jonathan Moyo, a man some consider the number one enemy of press freedom and freedom of speech. In an opinion piece in the Chronicle newspaper today, Moyo laid into the Constitutional Court for creating ambiguity around the issue of criminal defamation, which has long been used to silence journalists and citizens who criticize mainly President Mugabe. The court explained last week that it had found criminal defamation unlawful in 2014 only under the old constitution, leaving the impression that the law remains valid unless it is challenged in terms of the new charter. But Moyo disagreed, calling the law uncivilized and unlawful even under the new constitution. His response sparked mixed reactions. Reporter Ntungamili Nkomo reached media trainer Zenzele Ndebele for his take.
People believe that the enemy to the freedom of the press is not the law itself, but people like Jonathan Moyo. We have always made sure that radio stations in Zimbabwe are not licensed. Newspapers are not getting free access to information, and here and there are called and threatened for what they write. So I don't know whether that is a Damascus moment for Jonathan, or he's just trying to play to the gallery and pretend to be, you know, interested in what is going on.
Should we, as the media, count Mr. Moyo as one of our newest allies?
I would question on that, and I would say people should treat him with, you know, suspicion, because unfortunately for Jonathan, he tends to defend the media when he wants something. When he got into power, he knew that he wanted the revenge for Dinyane. He was a friend for the media. He was actually criticizing the police for misbehaving whenever they stopped the journalists, and we knew that he was banking the media so that he could use them.
Zenzele Ndebele is a media trainer. He was speaking on the line with reporter Ntungamili Nkomo from Bulawayo.
ZANU-PF says it is unfazed by the anti-Mugabe demonstrations by Zimbabweans in the diaspora over the weekend, saying the ruling party held its own marches in Victoria Falls in solidarity with the president, while making final preparations for the 91-year-old's birthday party to be held next Saturday in the resort town. Zimbabweans in countries including South Africa, the United Kingdom, and the United States staged demonstrations on Mugabe's birthday Saturday, demanding that he steps down to end the economic and political crisis in the country. ZANU-PF Matabelele and North Youth Chairman Tamuka Nyoni tells Studio 7's Standegile Mhlanga their marches were a success while castigating Zimbabweans in the diaspora.
They are cowards. They ran away from Zimbabwe. Whatever they can do, we don't mind. But we, as the youth of Zimbabwe, we stand by the side of His Excellency. We have those marches joining the first family, because the president was celebrating the birthday with the first family in headquarters in Harare. So we, as the working province, so it's possible, the peaceful march with the school children and the ordinary youth in particular.
What exactly did you do, and was there a huge turnout?
The turnout was so good, almost about 350 youth were carrying the posters that were carrying the message that says, happy birthday to His Excellency. Kula uze ukokobe. In Tonga, we say, twakabomba, twakatandabala. Many people came and joined us.
How far have you gone with the preparations for the next weekend?
We are almost done. On Wednesday, we are having a final meeting with the stakeholders, finalizing everything. We are almost done.
That was Tamuka Nyoni, ZANU-PF Matabelele and North EU chairman, on the line from Victoria Falls.
In our sports segment today, Zimbabwe have a tall order when they trot onto the Manuka Oval in Canberra tomorrow for a showdown with powerhouse, the West Indies. Reporter Michael Cariati tells us why.
The West Indies will start off as favorite after winning 34 of their previous 44 ODI meetings between the two sides, that an upset is possible, as Ireland have proved. Ireland shocked the West Indies by 4 wickets, but the Windies have recovered and have now moved to second place on the table following their 150-run destruction of Pakistan. Zimbabwe, on their part, are in fourth position after South Africa slumped to a heavy 130-run loss at the end of India, sending them crashing to fifth on the log. Zimbabwe breathed a new life into their campaign following that 4-wicket win over the United Arab Emirates, and Captain Elton Chigumbura is targeting victory over the Windies. He is on record saying Zimbabwe will run down the big guns.
We are good enough to win our matches at this tournament.
The Chevrons have so far been impressive, with Hamilton Masakaza plundering 80 runs against the Proteas and Sean Williams hitting an unbeaten 76 against the United Arab Emirates. Not to be outdone was Test captain Brendan Taylor, who is in with 47 runs, and cricket follower Andrew Mathore is also of the opinion that the Windies will fall.
A small Ireland beat West Indies, so Zimbabwe can also win against West Indies.
Mathore says cricket and sports in general has gone through a period of change.
I think there is no more any small team. Zimbabwe can win this match.
Chris Gayle's form has been a major concern for the Windies, as their star man was dismissed for a paltry 4 against Ireland. All-rounder Duane Bravo will most likely miss the encounter against Zimbabwe after aggravating an injury in the win over Pakistan. However, Andrew Russell, who is in peak form, is readily available and is looking forward to tearing Zimbabwe apart. Victory over the West Indies will send Zimbabwe closer to a place in the Super 8 stages and another place in history. Observers, however, have pointed out that it is easier said than done. Meanwhile, Caps United yesterday beat Dynamo 6-5 on post-match penalties in the Sino-Zimbabwe Cement Cup at Rufaro Stadium after the teams had failed to break their 1-1 draw in regulation time. For winning the tournament, Caps United received 15,000, while Dynamo's the losers took home 10,000. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Thanks, Michael. Still in sports news, football fans are in mourning in Zimbabwe following the death of Twalumba Holdings executive chairman Nkululeko Sibanda, the owner of Twalumba FC, a team in Division 1. He was 42. We spoke to Ezra Chisasbanda, a sports commentator.
The death of Nkululeko Sibanda came as a shock to most of the football fraternity, as well as myself. I'm really saddened by the great man who has been trying to develop our sport, trying to develop football. We know that he owned Harare Highfields, a team where he actually took Peter Ndlovu all the way from South Africa to come and play for that team, and he later on loaned him to Black Mambas, as well as took Martin Ndlovu to coach Black Mambas because he was the sponsor of Black Mambas. Mr. Nkululeko is a man who loved football, is a man who wanted football to grow in Zimbabwe, but unfortunately, he just passed on. We understand that from some problems in life, economic hardships and all that, we understand there's some problems with the banks. He owned a lot of money, so a lot of people were after his head demanding their money. I don't know exactly the cause of his death, but we understand that he wasn't feeling so well, that he left and went to reside at a place somewhere called Budiriro. From there, he was quickly taken to Paramount Hospital, where he died.
That was sports commentator Ezra Chisasbanda putting a lead on our show. My name is Chris Gande. Good night.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, reminding you to stay tuned for 8:30 p.m. when we discuss a live talk.